Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. I'm Brock Dittus, and I'm joined by host Aaron Flores and today's guest, Steph Routh. We come to you from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia. We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way. Compliments, by the way, on your radio production. Every time you do something for the bike show, it comes out sounding really great. So.
Oh, I love you too. Thank you very much.
Aww.
Well, likewise. And I have to say, like, the last, like, the Delaney's and...
Yeah, that was fun.
And there have been, like, listening to talk about enforcement in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
How they were so great about it. It's like, oh.
Yeah. The benefits of being in a small town, I imagine,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, how many small towns are like, you know... They've got a point. If you want to keep yourself safe, you know, might as
sure,
well
sure.
get a Volvo. I'm just saying.
Right, right.
So. What are you doing on the roads with that thing anyway?
Yeah. Don't you know how dangerous it is? There aren't even bike lanes there. You're like, oh, what a cry.
Yeah, seriously.
And congratulations on getting out from the basement.
Thank you. It feels good. Yeah, now we're on the first floor.
It's like a window.
We've got windows. We got windows plural now.
Seriously. More than one.
Yes.
Does it distract you?
Sometimes I'll see somebody. It's dark out now, so we'll be cool, unless they have lights. But yeah, every now and then I'll see somebody walk by, and I'm like, oh, do I know? No, of course I don't know that person. But there's still like that switch in your brain that goes off.
I'm like, oh, hi.
Yeah.
I still haven't met enough of the neighbors to actually wave through the window yet, and probably wouldn't. I suppose. Like, yeah.
How long have you been here?
It's been since June, I think. I'm trying to remember. It was June 1st that we signed the papers. So, yeah. We hauled some stuff over by bike, but we didn't do it move by bike. So maybe a good place
You're
to start. Okay. Thank you. First of all, absolution. That's what I was hoping for.
I mean, you moved by bike, but it was just you moving stuff.
Right.
You and a couple people moving stuff.
Yeah. But to qualify, the first load was moved by my in-law's rental car.
Oh, that's
because
true.
They were in town and they wanted to help, and I wasn't going to quash them and be like, I have principles. So
it's like, now I no longer have in-laws.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. But we did a couple of loads by bike, and then I wrapped up with car to go. Because I had, nice. I believe, my stereo and my computer were the things I was, like, very protective of. And I didn't have good enough packing to, like, insulate them against the trailer that I had. Because it didn't have any suspension or anything. It was metal.
And there isn't a lot of capacity in a car to go.
No.
I mean, did you have trouble getting
it? I'll show you a picture later on. I packed that thing out. That was ridiculous.
Can you put it in the show notes?
Sure. Yeah. Definitely.
It's probably not recommended by the people of car to go. But.
Well, I mean, I was riding with they call it a tailgate. The tailgate is the part that goes down. The hatch was open.
Okay.
So I think that's probably okay. And just between.
Was it tied down or?
No, it was wide
should
open.
Should we be talking about this right now?
I don't think they listen. Oh. If they do, they haven't. They certainly haven't donated to the show yet, so I don't think we can.
I was about to say, but the Sprocket Podcast is accepting corporate sponsorship.
Underwriters.
Precisely. Yeah.
Underwriters, not sponsorship.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I come from the nonprofit world. We're new to underwriting.
Yeah. No, I will say that Car2Go, it's good in a pinch when you're stuck with a bike and you want to go somewhere and you want to take your bike with you. There was a Kickstarter campaign for a piece of equipment that would be like a bike rack for a car to go. Car to go stepped on that and said, we don't support that.
Please
You're violating.
Please don't put stuff on our cars.
Terms and
yes.
agreements, that's right.
Exactly. So there was that. But I'm not sure what they think about when you just put the bike in the back of the car to go. Because I can dangle my front wheel off of the tailgate when it's open.
Yeah.
And bungee cable the bike into the back of the car. And I think that's okay with them.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Let's see if this goes viral and if there's litigation coming in later.
So when you hauled your stuff, you said the hatch was open. Did you tie the hatch down at all?
No.
No.
No, it seemed
it was
safer.
Like jawing open?
Well, the way that the, like, you know when you open like a screen door or something and then it just kind of like pops open?
Yeah. It's the hydraulics.
Yeah. It had really good hydraulics. And so I figured it was probably safer just to let it extend all the way up.
Wow.
Then to try and tie it down.
Yeah.
Also, didn't have a bungee cable handy at the time. So.
Also wasn't raining.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, it was cloudy, but it wasn't raining. So that worked out okay, I guess. But I got all the stuff over here, at least with I didn't rent any sort of a, aside from the car to go, which I guess is a rental. I didn't have to rent a moving truck.
Yeah, you didn't rent a U-Haul or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of sort of did that. So I'm curious, because Steph, you have a book coming out about moving by bike.
That's correct. It's called How to Move by Bike.
That's a wonderfully intuitive title. Seriously.
It was inspired. It came to me one night.
Yeah. Do you have recommendations for the people who are curious about the move by bike thing, but are afraid of the move by bike thing? Because I've helped with a couple, but I think I was in that situation in which I was like, I don't think I can get my shit together easily enough for these people to help me with the move.
So can I ask, how did you feel? Were you scared of the move by bike thing before you actually did it?
Before and after.
Really?
Yeah, because
okay,
I helped somebody else.
Okay, so why before and then why after?
I helped somebody else, and I was like, I am totally cool with carrying other people's stuff. But I realized that for me to host a group of people that were going to be carrying all my things, I was worried about the distance, although I'm sure that's probably, it shouldn't be a factor, because I know there's a lot of really generous people that are really excited mm-hmm. to help. I was also worried, like I said, about my ability to pack things together in a way that they would be transportable by somebody else. Because mm-hmm. I'm the kind of guy, when I move, I have like the old boxes that are falling apart that I just threw everything into, and they don't have lids or anything like that. So I think there was that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the hosting was actually kind of like, because I wasn't sure, when we moved into the place that we live here, there was a certain clause in the rental agreement about how you had to honor the quiet enjoyment of your neighbors or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed to me that if you have a house or something, like Lance and Becky just moved into a new place not too far from here, and I helped out with that one mm-hmm. very slightly. I carried a box.
But you carried a box on a tall bike.
I did. It was really impractical. But it was fun.
It was rad.
It
you
was
took
fun.
A tall bike to a bike move.
I did. Well, it is a cargo bike.
That's
technically.
True. That is true. It does have platforms on it.
I think in time you'll find a way to like ballast, you know, it'll become like a Christmas treat.
Exactly. Yeah. I could have like laundry hanging off the sides
that's
and
right.
that sort of thing.
Some
but
cantilevered.
That's, yeah.
You know, what kind of Christmas like... trees do you guys have? Put your laundry on it?
I always called it a
it's
Festivus
about practicality.
Bowl.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you ever lived in confined environments? I've lived in New York.
We don't have anything to hang this on. How about the Christmas
sacred.
Tree?
So I was worried about the idea that if I show up with a bunch of people helping me move all my stuff in, that somehow it would be violating my lease agreement, like on the day that I moved into the place.
You know, we had a friend who moved her storage things out of a U-Store place. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, there's some pretty strict, like how many people, you know, and she actually had to specifically ask permission. It was like, this is what's going to happen. It's not going to be a big deal. And apparently they were just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Okay. Just don't make a lot of noise.
Right.
And so we got to take the freight elevators, you know, up to the second
place.
It was so great. It
Those
was one of
fun.
My favorite.
Wait,
moves.
Did you take the bikes in the freight elevators?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did the whole, like...
There we go.
It was, like, multiple freight elevators, and then you saw the one guy, you know, coming out, you know, people were like, how are you going to get all your stuff under the... Well, I mean, can you get a mattress? And you're like, please.
You just haven't been around long enough to see this happen yet. That's
Wait
fascinating.
Till you see the kegerator.
Wait, so at these public storage units, is there a clause that you cannot have, like, more than a certain number of people come and help you
Most
move or something?
Are, yeah. It's to keep down, you know, with like property theft or whatever. Like most of them have a clause that says something about like two or three people
okay.
at a time.
And they don't want people to have like, you know, parties in storage units, I would imagine. I mean, if there were
Ain't
no
party like a storage unit party.
I would have a storage unit party. I mean, can you imagine? You just have like an on-call event space.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah, you just pay a pretty minimal rental fee.
Hence the clause.
I remember I had been looking into the idea of living in a storage unit at one point. Obviously, that's against their
yes.
agreement. Like,
yes.
you're not supposed to do that.
Also against zone.
Right. The city itself has an issue with that. But I remember looking into like all the possibilities, like the ways that that could happen, because there would be, I believe there's electricity accessible. There's at least a light bulb.
Really?
Oh, there's lights.
Yeah. And so if you get one of those things that gives you a standard wall outlet plug from like a lights
socket.
Yeah, exactly. You might be able to bide your time very nicely after hours. But then there's security and that sort of thing. So,
could you have a podcast studio in it?
I've wondered about that too.
Me too.
Yeah.
We've moved into another, into our own. We moved at the beginning of the year. We moved by bike into our
I helped with that one. That
I
was
know,
nice.
Thank you. And then you moved out of the neighborhood.
Right. Sorry about that.
That's cool. Don't be creeped out too much if we like rent space near you.
Okay. Easy enough. Easy enough. We'll just,
no, it's just an office. No,
right. Always one step ahead.
Just keep following you like breadcrumbs.
Right. Steph and Ed are always just like on our heels. Yeah.
Yep. But we moved into our space at the beginning of the year, and then both Ed and I are now working from home, and we're like, maybe we should get an office space someplace. So now we're like, what are all of the cheap, like non-traditional environments and, you know, storage spaces came up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that is always kind of the question too, when you're either self-employed or working from a home office or something like that, like you have to create some kind of mental space between the place where you just live and hang out and the place where you actually do work, mm-hmm. which can be difficult, I think.
And we have a really small office, a relatively small office with like one window. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, either we're going to fight over natural lighting or, and I ended up doing like an IKEA hack with making a mobile standing desk, which I'm very excited about. So
nice.
I get to wheel it into the living room. And actually for BikeCraft this year, they're like, oh, you only have a few feet. We're going to have to be creative. And I'm like, I've got you covered.
There you go.
I've got a locking desk.
That's great.
I'll just bring it. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Wait,
it's going to be the debut of both the book and my mobile standing desk.
Yeah. Is this a desk that you can get from IKEA or?
It's a desk you can get all of the components from IKEA.
Okay, I see. Okay.
Oh, nice.
But not endorsed by IKEA or its subsidiaries.
No, I've submitted it to IKEAHackers.net.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey. But it's one of the Expedite, you know, 2x2,
okay.
those square, and then some casters, rolling casters, and
yeah.
then. And then just, you know, a shelf above. And
yeah, this never occurred to me to, like, just build something completely new out of all that stuff. Because mm-hmm. they sell just components to all of their furniture as well.
I think they
right.
should have a Rube Goldberg challenge. Like a, would it be
yes.
like an IKEA-sponsored Rube Goldberg? Like, make the most ridiculous way to start the coffee maker. Yeah.
Because everybody wants their coffee. It's basically an elegant set of dominoes, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Like the OK
Wait,
Go.
Is a Rube Goldberg, that's not a perpetual motion machine.
No. It's like, yeah, it's this super absurd machine that does something simple like squeeze a tube of toothpaste onto a
Right,
toothpaste.
Right. You know? An over-engineered solution.
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay. That makes sense.
Did you ever see OK Go?
Yeah,
yes.
they have
here,
a few
here we go again.
Videos. Like that, don't they? Or maybe just one.
Yeah, they have that, and they have the one with the treadmill.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the treadmill was the one that they kind of broke out with, I believe.
Yes.
But they've been famous and I think widely praised for the way that they've done really innovative things with music videos. And it takes a lot of planning and putting things together.
Yeah, the one take music video?
Seriously.
Like, who else does that?
Seriously. That's tricky. So you've got this book coming out.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I'm like, we should
no,
just
it's
talk
cool.
about
it's cool.
Goldberg.
There's so many ways this could go. How long have
I
you...
I was actually debating in my head, should we? There's
we
a time
in
which I was addicted to Japanese Rube Goldberg videos.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's, see? Look at what we did.
Why not? It's okay. We'll get back to the book. Tell us about
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch online. I can't remember the actual name for them in Japanese. But when I was living in Hawaii, someone turned me on to this string of videos on YouTube that are all of these Rube Goldberg devices that all, again, like do something really simple, like roll a ball into a cup or something. But of course, you know, all of this elaborate planning and mechanism before that. And they're all like done by this one Japanese company that, and they all have like this theme song going along with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but yeah.
Okay, we'll look that up. We'll find a thing on the internet and put it on another place on the internet.
And I think this might be a segue. I have a hope, a dream, a wish that someone like either Community Cycling Center or Scrap or OMSI will do an annual like recycled Rube Goldberg challenge as an event fundraiser and like contest. Can you imagine, like, because we have so many great engineering firms and mechanical engineering programs
and a lot of garbage
and a lot of recyclables like scrap and CCC and others, like they actually
they
already have the stuff, so like they could just donate, be like Junkyard Wars
right
in Portland, like with all of our recycled stuff and you know, spend a day, and then the winning exhibit ends up at OMSI for a month.
That would be cool.
And I was like, I've tried to pitch it to like multiple people. So, Sprocket Podcast Land, someone please make this happen.
The idea is out there in the world.
Yeah,
someone has to roll.
Someone
with it.
Has to do it. Now.
Yeah. What was the thing? There's the kinetic sculpture contesting that happens in multiple places up and down the West
like
Coast
Corvallis
and other places.
One.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking of initially. A listener had told us
da
about
Vinci
that a long
Days.
Time ago. Yeah, is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar now.
And they also have a really awesome sidewalk art. Contest.
Oh, really?
Where everyone gets a certain square and you get sidewalk chalk, and just the art is amazing.
And that's in Corvallis. I still need not that I need a reason to visit. I've heard there's a bunch of cool stuff happening in Corvallis anyways, but I've still never been there. So someday I'll have to hop down. But
you've
Da Vinci
been to Corvallis?
Days. No.
What?
No. I've been to Albany on the train.
Even though they kicked our butts this year in Bike Commute Challenge?
I know. That now I'm resentful, and that's why I'm not going. No, it's never on my way to anywhere else, you know. It's kind of tucked down there in the Willamette Valley, and I just need to do it someday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
What was the other thing I was thinking of, though? Johnny Olivan is the guy in like North Portland, I think, mm-hmm. who has done a bunch of amazing construction with bikes, really interesting configurations of bicycles and that sort of thing.
Rejuiced?
Yeah. Is that his brand?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. And I feel like there was one other thing, but I can't think of it now.
You'll think of it.
I'm sure it'll come up at some point. Yeah. I'm really reaching for a segue. With all of these kinetic machines, how could... Yes, that's a good idea. We hadn't... I actually thought about that earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the Rube Goldberg.
But there's no flow now.
Yes. So here we are. So we're drinking some beers and beverages, and you have the Long Brewing Kolsch.
Yes.
Which was brought to me by a friend, and Paul Long.
And you were saying that he brews in his garage?
He brews in his garage, yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
He has won awards. His garage is as full of ribbons and awards and trophies as it is of actual like boilers and tanks to hold beer in and that sort of thing. So, yeah. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he is a third generation hop farmer or comes from a hop farming line
That's
of families.
Awesome.
So, yeah, he's really good at making beer. And, yeah, this is the Kolsch.
Thank you, Mr. Long.
Yes, Mr. Long, long may you live. And then this is Laurelwood Brewing's Free Range Red, which I was actually, I was doing a bus tour with Doug from Kick-Ass Oregon History. And they were doing a historic old-timey bars tour around town. And they were sponsored by Laurelwood, and there was one of these left over. So I'm just now enjoying this Free Range Red, which is a decent beer. And you have?
Oh, what is this, the third show in a row I've done... Reed's ginger ale here.
It's that good. Reed's.
Yeah. Really is.
Yeah.
It's kind of our flagship, or my flagship, I guess, soda.
It's a good one. Yeah. And have you decided on whether you like the premium or the extra better?
Oh, the extra.
Okay.
Definitely.
More of a kick.
Yeah. I like the spiciness.
Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I did have my first eggnog of the season yesterday. I was really excited about that.
Was it homemade?
No.
We were going to mix a little ginger ale and eggnog.
We were talking about that. Yeah. Yeah. We still could. It's in the fridge.
Yeah, I might get to it later.
Okay, easy enough. Yeah, no, I was just buying eggnog from the store. I've never made my own, but yeah, we talked about eggnog a couple weeks ago too, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of running themes on this show in the past couple weeks.
It's a sunrise coffee.
Yeah. Christopher was talking about
and Kelly,
making your own. Yeah. No, I just bought it from the store, but I put whiskey into it, and it was glorious. So
whiskey makes. I mean, I won't say whiskey makes everything.
But it doesn't make beer
better.
I'm
sure there are exceptions. I just can't think of one right now.
Doesn't make a hangover any better.
Yes, it does.
It depends. Yeah. Little hair of the dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me when you got the idea, Steph, to start this this book project. How long have you been working on it?
Well, so I was... I was in the certificate program. There's a 1 year long certificate program for fiction and creative nonfiction.
Okay.
At the IPRC, which is the Independent Publishing Resource Center.
They do a good thing here in town.
Just celebrated their 15th birthday this summer.
They did. They're quinceañera. That's right.
That's fantastic.
And I'm actually, disclosure, I'm now on their board.
Are you?
They're in the Willamette Week Give Guide.
Oh, no kidding.
Just saying.
There we go.
So, and so I was in that, and as part of the final project, you have to make a zine of some sort. And I had gotten into it for a couple of reasons, but one, you know, creative nonfiction, I had no idea what it was. And by the second semester, you know, I actually understood a little more of what it was, just enough to be incredibly scared of the idea of creative nonfiction. Because like whenever I was thinking of the stories that I would want to tell of that were creative nonfiction, it was like my favorite stories, you know, the statute of limitations is not yet necessarily expired. Favorite stories. So, if you can't tell those,
this could end in indictment.
Exactly. I'm like, you can't change the names, because a couple of the names are just really, I can't even say them.
But they're just too
but
good.
Delicious.
You can't leave them out.
Oh, you can't change, you can't make it up. So I'll just mention like Nancy Funk. I'm just going to leave it there.
That's a name that you can't forget.
That's a name that you can't, and I cannot forget her for reasons that I called the police for. So, so I was
there's so much
out.
Story we can't tell right now.
It's true.
That, you just kind of wish. You wish that there wasn't that thing.
Exactly. But, yeah. So
I'm loving this ambiguity, though.
Right.
Tum, tum, tum. That's what ellipses were made
That's
for.
That's right.
Right. This is the audible ellipse.
It's like, so,
yes.
So I was trying to figure out like what I was going to do for a zine, and I was asking my friend Noelle Mickleberry, who works at the Community Cycling Center, who had just done a bike move. You know, we had talked about it, and she was nervous about it, but she was excited, and so we talked about how she could do it best, and she was hearing all of these great stories from other people who had moved by bike a number of times. And after her bike move, you know, I happened to be telling her, like, you know, I need to do this final project. And I was like, and I don't know what to do. And she was like, Steph, why don't you just do how to move by bike? And I was like, brilliant. And so,
because you've done so much of it.
That's right.
And it's near and dear to your heart.
Exactly. And no one had done it. And, you know, everyone.
And no one won't arrest you for writing about it.
I don't think so far.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you were saying earlier, Brock, that people are nervous about it beforehand. They don't necessarily know what to do. The people who do it only do it because they feel that they have the support of other friends, that they interview. You know, a lot of people ask a lot of questions like, how do I set this up? Like, what do I do? And so I thought just to have kind of a how-to would kind of allay some of those concerns and might allow other people to feel more confident and more excited about the idea that moving by bike actually might not be such a crazy idea. Because what is a crazy idea is, for example, renting a huge truck that you've never driven before that should, I think, in most countries require a CDL, a commercial driver's license, or at least an endorsement. You end up with this huge truck that you have to drive down residential streets.
And back into places that you're not accustomed to backing into.
Exactly.
With a vehicle of its size.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like most people, that they're probably driving at the biggest Subarus and probably less.
Right, right.
And I mean, that to me is crazy and it's stressful. And the one time I had to do it for an event fundraiser, I was freaked out the entire time. And I can't help but think that the thing that we do in terms of moving as a society is certainly in most American cities is stressful.
Mm-hmm.
and crazy making and just really scary. Whereas you bring in, you know, if it's not pouring down rain, if the winds aren't, you know, Wyoming style, like 50 mile an hour, like the Delaney's we're talking about, and you can pack, there's no reason, I think, that you can't necessarily bike move. And even trying, even if you don't get everything at the end of the day, it's still a really fun time.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's the sort of thing you would probably be doing anyways, in a way, because like all of us kind of enjoy riding our bikes around town. You're going to ride your bikes with your friends at one point or another. So you could kind of leverage that utility of having your friends ride bikes. You're going to have people over to your new place because everybody's curious about where you're moving to. And you want to eat.
Right.
Everybody wants to eat. Everybody That's wants right. to drink. So you might as well pair all of those things. And are those kind of like the basic elements? Did I miss any?
I would say that's it. Like, you know, the move, the housewarming, you know, the how to go. And also, I mean, one thing that I've really loved about moving by bike, when we had moved from our place in North Portland to our place in Lentz, we spent a lot of time doing different bike routes.
Yeah.
You know? And so if you're planning to bike in your new neighborhood, it's the perfect getting to know you.
Oh, yeah.
Dear bikeable neighborhood or non-bikeable neighborhood, and please avoid this intersection at all costs.
As the case may be, yeah.
Right. And so you get to do all of that when you're figuring out your route for your bike move. And it's a great way to get to know a lot of your neighbors. And boy, is it a really great way to get to know your couple of neighbors during the bike move.
Yeah, yeah. So is that, does it become political on either end? Like, I mean, obviously, you've got a bunch of people with bicycles and trailers and other human-powered apparatus are all showing up in one place. They're converging. So that creates a crowd. Have you seen that ever become an issue on either end of the move?
You know, that's a really good question. We had...
Because I can't think of any.
For our bike move, because we were on Alberta just before the interchange, we were really worried about it, which is why we actually got some traffic cones and just reserved about 3 or 4 parking spaces for the cargo bikes, the other bikes, just because. I think that we had one where it wasn't on the busy street, but it was an immediate turn onto a busy street, and there was really no way to cork because it was also a TriMet bus. You know, it was a frequent frequent bus route.
Okay,
and there was enough stuff. You know, it went straight into an uphill. So,
so it's like the perfect storm for moving things by bicycle.
It was definitely a 301, and that was actually the move where I overloaded my hitch.
I read about this. I was reading your advance, and that was that sounded like a terrible situation.
Yeah,
was it 600 pounds?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's intense. Hauling 600 pounds.
I was hauling over 600 nice. pounds, and the hitches, well, it was until like halfway up, and then I hit a driveway, you know, just that little lip, and it was enough to just shear the hitch. And I'm like, you know, and I had just actually written the draft for how to move my bike, so I was like, I think I might have to take this out of production. I don't think I'm qualified anymore.
The alleged expert, but at the same time, like, this is not a foolproof method.
No, that's right.
One of the things you mentioned in the text was the idea that you want to kind of get familiar with your equipment before you try and move stuff with it. Like, if you've never used a trailer before, like, ride around with it empty.
Yeah.
And figure out how that works.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a bike move,
ideally.
But it was, yes. If you have time. The Sunday Parkways in Lentz, like 3 years ago, former co-host Brandon Rhodes and I have access to this huge trailer, and he and I have taken it out on various occasions. I think once with disastrous results. Like, I had a terribly loaded load. Like, I was picking up a free bed from someone, and we were taking it the distance of like 5 blocks or something. It was not that far of a move. But between the place where I got the bed and the place where I was taking it was a downhill, and not even a downhill that you would notice, I think. But if you have all the weight on the back of your trailer and none on the tongue, and you're using your wife for ballast, that's a situation that can turn bad very quickly. In short,
with marital overtones.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Well, it was my fault for putting her there, and it was kind of her fault for bailing, but I don't blame her at all. I would have done the same thing. I probably would have done worse because I was the one that kind of engineered this whole mastermind. That was a terrible idea anyways. Like, if you're going to put weight on your – and we've talked about this earlier. We talked with Ted Buehler, actually, about where do you put the weight?
Where do you put the weight?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And basically, balancing your load is very important. I'll let you guys all reference that that episode on your own. But we had a situation in which I believe there was an anecdote from Matt Piccio in your text as well, talking about moving things by the spring water trail,
mm-hmm.
and you have the stanchions there, so you have to make sure that your loads are not too wide, to be blocked by those stanchions,
mm-hmm. or that they're high enough to clear them.
Yeah, see,
either,
this is the part that I like.
Horizontally or vertically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we had a situation where we had that big trailer loaded up with, I think, a chair on it and various people riding on this trailer. And Brandon was towing it through. And everything fit through the stanchions on the spring water on this Sunday Parkways ride, except for the bicycle that we had bungeed to the back of the trailer. The wheels stuck out a little bit too far.
Oh, ow.
So the whole thing went through, and that was Adele's bike, actually.
Like,
the whole thing went through the stanchions just fine, and we thought we were going to be okay. And then at the very end, just bam. The bike was okay, I think, but it was kind of a jarring realization for all of us. Yeah, that was no fun. So you have to be aware of what your trailer is doing if mm-hmm. you're using a trailer.
And also just because like going uphill is one thing.
Yeah.
Breaking downhill is another.
And yes.
your load is only as good as your brakes.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes.
A lesson that some of us have learned.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any stories?
You know, actually, the only one that I can think of, I think Adam George, who's done a number of our trailers, he's with Bound Bikes, or he is Bound Bikes. He's created the bamboo trailers.
Adam George is Bound Bikes this summer. Yeah,
I'm sure that he could tell some stories because he's moved a lot of pianos.
Yeah.
On the back of those bamboo trailers. My big one was because I used to have a Burley. We still have a Burley trailer, and so I would load vertically. And one time, someone coming down off the Broadway Bridge, someone who was new to bike moving, stopped in the middle of the
bridge.
Actually at the bottom of the bridge in the middle of the bike lane.
Okay.
Like right in front of me. And I, for no reason, I think he, I don't know if he wanted to take a picture. I'm not sure exactly, but I was right behind him and I tried to, you know, go around him and ended up spilling on the side. Like I got around him, but you know, it wasn't.
The stuff did not get around.
Well, like it got around and it, you know,
and down the street.
You learn a lot about physics that way.
Yeah.
You do.
And the law of objects in motion and that sort of thing.
That's precisely it. But it's also a really exciting. I think if you loved Tetris as a kid, moving by bike is for you.
Ah, yes.
Because I think part of the joy is figuring out, you know, with a couple of bungees or tubes, old inner tubes, how much you can fit and in what configuration. Because part of it is also the parade aspect. So
right,
much of it.
Right.
So it's like, you know, you have anywhere from 15 to, 70 people. And they're carrying all of this stuff baldly, you know, and it really is that kind of pageantry of, you know, what can you fit and with how few bungees and, you know, how wide, how tall, how heavy can you get and still have it be stable.
Right.
And I think that is, your first move is just the joy of community.
Mm-hmm.
Like Taz Lumens just recently posted in her blog, Blooming Rock, because the Lance and Becky's bike move 2 weeks ago was her first. And so she was just so excited about the idea of the community aspect. Like this is the urban barn raising aspect of bike moving and how exciting it is and how much fun and something that's normally drudgery. And one thing that that a few other contributors, because there are 23 contributors to this book, and I reference is that usually the time that you're bike moving is also the time that other people are moving by U-Haul, and so you invariably go past these people who've been conscripted by their friends to you know, pack all of their stuff into this bottleneck that is a U-Haul that no one wants to drive, and you know, and then they see a whole bunch of people like ringing their bells, you know, with all of this stuff, you know,
smiling and waving.
Exactly. Yes. And they're just like, I remember going past one, they were putting in this huge looking, you know, dining room table into this U-Haul. And you could just see one of the guys like, Like, I'm totally on the wrong team.
Yeah. She just kind of instantly deflated.
Yeah, he was just like,
the one bike move I was on, they said something fairly similar to that is, you know, you have the friend with the truck or with the SUV or whatever, and that's the friend you call when you need something moved. And, like, they'll do it, but they're, you know, it takes some coaxing. They're kind of grumbling about it.
Yeah,
you
it's have the typical like friend moving. With a truck, yeah.
Right. And guys and ladies with cargo bikes at the bike move that I was on, you know, that's the friend with the truck. But in the meantime, they're not grumbling. They're like, yeah, I'll do this because they want to see, like, what they can do with their bike and, like, how much they can put on. In a way, it's almost like bragging about it.
That's
it's a complete inverse of how of moving by car, in a way.
I feel like bike truck. Moving 101 is like with your pannier and or your backpack, like whatever you have, your front rack, whatever.
However small, you can fit on.
However
that.
You can fit, like, a small amount of thing. And then, like, by 201, you're like, Oh no! I'm getting the armoire.
We're gonna make this work.
I remember one time, Ken Sutherland and Aaron Tarfman actually had an actual tug of war over who was gonna take the mattress because there wasn't much stuff.
I remember reading that, and that sounded just ridiculous. But I guess it's the best kind of ridiculous it can be, right? Because it's all to a good purpose. And did they? I mean, they worked it out. They smoothed it out in the end.
I think one person got the box spring and the other person got the mattress. So okay. It was a good negotiating.
Good compromise.
There we go.
Whose bike move were you on, Aaron?
Oh, gosh. I cannot remember their names. Oh, I'm so sad.
That's cool. Where do they live?
But that's also hilarious. Like, you moved someone and you don't remember their names.
Oh, I was, between shifts. I didn't even know who these people were.
Right.
I met them the day I got there.
And that's the part of the thing. Like, that's almost the transferable nature of this, is that there are people who are excited about carrying other people's stuff with almost no repayment. I mean, obviously there's coffee before, there's beer after, there's food involved in many portions. You get to be in a parade. Like, all of these are good things.
Yeah.
And that's why the people with the U-Hauls are kind of like, you know, deflated when they see it happening, because it's so much more fun than the way that, yeah. But the idea that you can do this for someone you don't even know.
Oh, yeah. He was amazed. He was like, you know, you came here. I mean, there was people that, like, a lot of us didn't know, or, like, didn't know him, but knew each other. You know, because the community is small enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was fairly new to everybody there. I was between shifts at work. I had like this 4-hour break. And yeah, just met the guy there. I saw it on the shift site. So it was posted on the shift list. And just wanted something to do for that, you know, 4-hour break.
Not doing anything else.
Yeah. And I've always wanted to do a bike move anyway. So it was sort of like, you know, circumstances aligned just right. And it was so much fun. Yeah. Where was I going with this? I can't remember.
It's okay. It was a good time.
But it was a good time. I didn't know the person. It was actually not very far from here. It was 42nd and... just a little past Hawthorne. I can't remember the name of the cross street there.
Somewhere right
Taylor,
near, like,
maybe.
Kind of the nexus of everything.
Yeah. And then moved down, like, Burnside and 22nd area.
Oh, nice. They moved closer in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We talked about it in one episode, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I posted pictures on
the I remember the pictures.
Yeah.
But yeah, the difference between, you know, if you help someone move in a, you know, quote unquote traditional move, you know, it's kind of the assumption is like, you owe me one.
Right.
Like, now we're bonded because I helped you with this drudgery.
And I know you well enough to assume you're not going to walk off with my awesome.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Insert.
Try this.
Belonging here. Yeah.
If you're walking through the neighborhoods and you see somebody moving, and go up to them and ask them if you can help and see what will happen.
They're like, fuck no. This is my
Who
stuff.
The hell
Get
are
your
you?
Own.
Yeah.
The free box
exactly.
is over there.
Yeah. Steph, you hold the record for the most people involved in a bike move. Because it's up there.
Well, we had 70,
yeah.
And I haven't
Wait,
heard
did
anyone.
Guinness officiate this?
They don't need to.
Oh, all
we
right.
wish. I know.
The Sprocket podcast officiates this. I was there. I saw it happen.
Okay.
Well, that's the stamp.
That's close enough. But,
yeah, so we had, because we weren't sure how many? Because it was in January. You know,
oh, yeah.
Like end of
was
January.
It really? Okay. I was trying to remember. It was cold, I guess, kind of.
It was.
But it was dry.
It was nippy. It was dry. We were really thrilled because I think it was supposed to rain later that night. And we were just like, just hold it off. Because it had frozen the day before. And
okay.
It just thawed. And we were like,
wow.
Okay. But yeah, we had. What was really funny was, I mean, there were a number of things that were actually strangely funny about that one, because both Ed and I had bike moved to our house mm-hmm. in North Portland. And so when we were moving together, we're like, you know, how many people are going to come? Cause there were a couple of other competing events. And we're like, well, we'll just see how many people, and you know, we had some people come in half an hour early because they were worried. It was a bike time. You know, it's like 20 minutes late, half an hour late. You know, you're
right.
Lucky when you come. People came early because they were worried that that they wouldn't have access to the good stuff.
They like wouldn't get to carry anything awesome.
Right. That the big, cool, clunky
right.
furniture would already be gone. Yeah. And then they
no
would be
notches
left
in
with
trailer.
This, yeah, pecuniary, yeah. just mm-hmm. infinitesimal.
And that's what I got.
What did you move, Brock?
Not nearly as much as I had capacity for, I'll tell you that. No, it worked out okay in the end.
And we ended up, so our real estate broker and our home insurance or home loan broker mm-hmm. Were both there at the beginning.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And at the end. And it was a funny story because we were talking about, obviously this was our first house, you know, we were trying to figure out all of these things like home insurance, like
right.
How do you go about? We were talking with our insurance broker, like how do you go about, you know, getting home insurance? And she was like, well, you know, just talk to the person who, you know, start with your home your auto insurance, who gives your auto insurance. And we're like, well, we don't actually have a car, you know. So do you have anyone that you like to work? She was like, wait, and then you know, there was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
And then there was, you know, she was like, oh, but you guys have driver's licenses. We're like, yeah, we have driver's licenses. And she was like, so you can get like a U-Haul. And we're like, actually, we're going to move by bike. She was like, you mean like Portlandia?
We're like,
exactly. And we were like, first of all, we were like, well, because I haven't actually watched this horrible, perhaps, but I haven't watched Portlandia. So I was like, they did.
You're one of the few and the pure. I was hoping it would be better.
I ended up going back on YouTube and watching the bike move, and I was like, wait, the general consensus when I was passing it, you know, yeah. when other people saw it too, were like, but the reality is so much stranger.
Oh, yeah.
Like
you don't have to make any fiction for
yeah.
this. Yeah.
No, yeah,
yeah. There was that, and then there was also just like that. This is bullshit. Nobody charges money for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is cool because it's free. You know, you get to do this like. It's not about hiring somebody to help you out with this. I mean, I guess if you really have no friends and nobody likes you, that maybe that's what you resort yeah. to. But
you pay for like the booze and the food,
right?
And the coffee and donuts, but
right.
You know, as opposed to paying a mover, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
But they also got. I mean, it was fascinating. Like they, you know, that it would take 3 days to do this bike
right,
move,
right,
and
right.
it's like actually it takes less time. I think in anything short. Shorter than I'd say 15 miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going less than 15 miles and there isn't, you know, a mountain range between those things or a canyon,
yeah, yeah.
It's probably potentially going to take less time.
Right.
You know, unless you also, I mean, there are a couple of other caveats. Like if you have a huge house, like with all oak furniture and no built-ins or you know you're you hoard like, obviously that's
yeah this is not for hoarders I guess
I would say not
yeah.
Or you'd have to have a lot more friends.
The thing is hoarders don't usually have
no.
that many good friends.
Well,
I think
well,
I mean, maybe
I mean, and that's such a one thing that I hadn't thought about that maybe we should talk about it in the future, maybe the second edition if it gets
yeah.
to that is
oh let's do it
like friend to stuff ratio.
Ooh.
We touch on it but
like the more friends you have, the less stuff you need.
Or less stuff per load.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a lot of stuff, you better have a lot of friends.
Okay. I was thinking far more ethereally, like the idea that, like, oh, if you know more people, you don't need as many things. But
I think that there's probably a lot to be said for
that. Oh, maybe so.
There's the barter economy, and there's actually a lot around emergency management. It's like, you get this pillow. Like, that is right. More like rationing. Towards the end, they're like, at our bike move, you're like, well, you know, I really want to take the easy chair, but I should probably leave it for someone else.
Please, sir, can I have some more? Well, there were two things I was curious about. Aaron, did you want to throw anything else in here?
No, I'm cool.
Okay. I was curious about mansplaining. There was a phrase that you used in this book, and that refers to the phenomenon in which a lady is standing around loading her thing up, and a bunch of guys are trying to tell her how to do it better.
Yes.
What's up with that?
I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know. Sorry. What is up with that?
I guess, yeah. Since you're the lady in the room, you can kind of direct that question to us, and I will say, yes, we are assholes. Yes, it's true.
I wasn't saying
that. No. But there's a certain tendency.
I will forever be apologizing for my gender.
I'll always be apologizing for my religion. So
Easy enough.
I catch myself doing that, or one thing that I always catch myself doing, and like I'm really ashamed of it when I catch myself doing, is like the whole like, oh, here, give me that, I'll do that for you, like, kind of, and it's all with the best of intentions.
That's right.
You know, somewhat. I think some of it is also sort of put into me by a more like misogynist society, you know, that I grew up in. But I think some of it comes from just the fact that you see somebody, a person who unconsciously or consciously you perceive them as maybe not being as skilled as you or not as capable as you. And yeah, this could apply across gender, but generally does not. Does it? And so, you know, you're helping the poor damsel in distress. And you're saying,
it turns into a chivalrous thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you're saying, oh, but you should. And then, of course, at the end of the day, she takes your advice and she goes, my hero. And you walk off into the sunset together, right?
It's a romantic comedy.
Yes.
The formula is there.
Well, and you know, as I think as you say, Aaron, like the individual like impulse is one of benevolence. Like you're like, oh, well, you know what? I'm not doing anything and you've got this thing and I'd love to help. But
right.
I see a lot more often, you know, a guy, you know, in the last move, like, you know, there was a guy who was like taking my side of this armoire so that he could take it down the stairs. And I'm like, okay, dude, sure. That's fine. It's going to end up, I'm going to carry it half mile. But if you need to take it down the stairs, you could take it down the stairs.
So it's a big exercise in being the bigger person. I'm glad that you had the fortitude.
Well, it was, that's, I mean, good. There was like, you know, it was I couldn't like get my hands around his neck because it was small. That's right. And my boyfriend was down, you know, downwind. So I didn't want to, you know, end up. But I did, you know, you see a lot of women. I had one time, which just made me boil like I had, you know, bamboo trailer and I was just, you know, you're sitting around and it's Tetris. So you're trying to figure out like, what is strategically, I have three inner tubes and I need to make, you know, six piece of furniture all align, you know, a lamp and an easy chair and an end table and a box spring, like, and you know, a couple of other boxes or whatever. How am I going to make this happen? And you know, you'll have two people. It's like, oh, can I help you with that? And at one point, finally, like, I was like, no, I've got it. You know, I had to do that three times to three different guys. And so I got it you know, I got it strung up and I was just, you know, checking the load, you know, rocking it back and forth to make sure that it was all in place. And then I had two other guys. This wasn't a huge bike move, but I had two other guys come up and tell me how they thought that, you know, what they think I can do to make the load more secure. And finally, I was just like, you know, this is my 61st bike move.
And it I do is, have some experience
I
here.
Was like, and it's my trailer. And if it's going to come off, like, I will own
I'll take
that.
My lumps.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you are not responsible for this load. I am. I take full responsibility, and I would really love it if you maybe
shut
do a
the
double,
hell up.
Oh. Yeah. Check your load. I was like, how's your load? And I actually went over.
This did you was, test their straps and be like, what's up with this?
I actually did.
This That's load fantastic. Is bullshit.
That's great.
I went over and I was like, and it was so flimsily done that I was
right.
Dude, heal thyself.
That's funny. Yeah,
these records are.
Maybe if you spent less time criticizing how I strapped in my load, you'd have more time strapping in your own load.
That's
right. First, take the plank out of your own eye, sir. That's hilarious. Wow.
And again, you know, it's like, because it's the double whammy, right? And, mm-hmm. and not to get too much into, you know, sexism and bike community, which I think has been a hot topic lately, especially with the opening of Gladys Bikes, which, you know, so many of us are so excited about. But
this is dumb. That's a shop that's just for girls.
Yeah, why do you need to?
Why can't they have shops just for guys?
Exactly.
That's
like
every
you,
bike shop that like, ever existed.
That's right.
that's every other bike shop, except for maybe Clever Cycle.
Well, why don't women just tell us what they need? And it's like, we have but
But you keep putting 700 C wheels on those damn things.
And I don't mean to say that as an indictment against you. Know, there's a lot of really awesome mechanics and a lot of
awesome
bike
cool.
shops. Yeah,
we're cool.
What was I going to say? But it's the double whammy of like bikes, which, you know, to use a home improvement kind of thing. And then there's also like heavy furniture.
Right.
Like
right.
moving heavy furniture.
Yeah. A lot of testosterone to go around.
Woo!
Exactly. Yeah. Man which make is, fire, move things. Yeah.
And what's funny is there is pretty much a. There's a pretty good gender distribution.
I'm impressed.
And age distribution.
Everything I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mansplaining.
Yeah.
Don't do it, guys.
Okay, there we go.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to continually apologize.
Nice of you to say. Although I know for a fact, Aaron, that you're not the one that's doing the mansplaining. So.
Well, and just say, like, I, you know, in terms of the like, internal sexism, like, I've done it to other women, too. Like, mm-hmm. it's not just a man to woman, but women get the brunt. And sometimes, most of the time it's by men, sometimes it's by other women. So
interesting. Yeah, it's such a weird confluence of things, like everything kind of coming together to make a weird social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Move the bed, guys.
Yep. Get out of the way. I'm curious, just maybe as a last thing to talk about, there's so many things to go in. And again, get the book. This is, where do people find it on the internet?
God bless you. Well, it will be on the shop, the online shop of hopscotchtown.com.
All right.
Which should be up and running in the next week.
Fantastic. Excellent.
And then also,
so don't rush
person,
it too soon.
If you're in Portland, in person at Bikecraft,
okay.
which is this coming weekend.
That's right. Yeah.
The 30th.
It's not on Black Friday. It's after Black Friday.
That's right.
Yeah. Saturday and
I
Sunday.
I just call it regular Friday.
Well, okay. Yeah. And then, so that's coming up. I was going to ask you about corking because this is a thing that people do. And I was impressed because corking is, just to explain, corking is the process in which if there's a large group of riders, certain riders will stand in the way of traffic so that the group of bikes can proceed against right of way occasionally.
That's great.
So,
against right of way, but somewhat recommended by the police.
Well, also ticketable by the police.
Oh yeah, you can
as
get
happened
ticketed.
Last year, I believe. But during Pedalpalooza, I think there was a ticketing. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Asshole.
Right. But just curious, Stefan, on your take on corking, because you kind of have this middle of the road position, as far as I understand, where you think, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, and you know. Don't be dumb about it, I guess.
That well, and that is my position.
Is that it? Okay.
Thank you very
Good, good.
Well, I mean, because I'm a practicalist, so basically whatever helps traffic move along most smoothly and most safely. So if that means corking, like if you have a lot of folks who need to get through an intersection, and you know, stopping and starting is obviously tough, especially if you have, you know, a multi-100-pound load, yeah. And you can cork. And I think it's definitely something that should be considered as an option.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty, the little cockles of my walking advocacy heart go a little gooey, thinking if you want to be actually legal about it, you can have some folks go in front, dismount from their bike, go in what's a legal crosswalk. They're now a pedestrian, and then walk slowly across the street, and could do it both ways until everyone's clear of the intersection.
That's fascinating.
That's completely legal corking.
That's not a ticketable offense.
That is not a ticketable offense.
Hmm.
So that's kind of a, you know, if you're very concerned about it, or
sure.
if there's a very busy intersection and you're concerned about negative interactions, or and the police getting uppity about, you know, an urban highway being corked,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of a legal way around it that also hopefully might appease, you know, some of the drivers. But on the whole, you know, a lot can be taken around by route planning.
Yeah.
It's so important, the route planning of it. So creating a way of, if you're going to, if you're going to cross a major intersection, that you do so at a signalized intersection, and then that's easy, you know, and if people need to, if you need to do it in a couple of different waves, then you do it in a couple of waves, and the rest of the time, as much as you can have on residential streets. You know, I mean, there's kind of an art to the route more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. You plan your route so that you have a low pressure situation as opposed to a high pressure one.
Right. Because the whole point is that people have fun, and it's hard to have fun, you know, if you're single file and then there's all these angry, you know, drivers coming by, you know, behind you when if you're on residential streets, you get to wave at like little kids,
right?
And on signalized intersections, you all get to go in this huge, beautiful wave. And often at signalized intersections is also where some commercial areas, you know, if you go on like Screen Door, you know, there's a couple of brunch places that are, you know, on busy intersections at signalized intersections. And it's great because like all of these people are hanging out, you know, on a Sunday afternoon waiting.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And while they're waiting, they're like, what is happening? Like,
they're seeing an amazing thing take place.
Ding.
Yeah,
yep, that's right.
That's great. Well, everyone go get the book again. It's is it Move by Bike?
How to Move by Bike.
How to that's Move right. by Bike by Steph Routh. So thank you for doing this. Thank you for putting it together. Yeah. I know there was at least one listener, I think in Germany, who was curious about getting something like this
yes.
put together.
Oh,
so
amazing.
This is a great resource. Everything is broken down here for you. So
well, and I'll just say as a closing that Portland is far from a stranger in terms of bike moving. You know, they've had it in many states in America. I've heard tell of a number of states in or a number of areas in most continents that have done formal bike moves. So it's not just a Portland thing.
That's good. That's good. It can be done anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Steph, do you have time to join us for headlines and mail, or do you need to get
Hell
moving?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, in that case, headlines, sir, shall we?
Headlines.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light.
So,
headlines.
Popular Mechanics via Logan. 10 ingenious bike hacks.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through all of them. I will tell you my favorite one, though, was the bike horn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, was this? Which one was this?
I don't remember the name of
it's
it.
It's not Orp, is it?
Yes.
Is
Orp.
It? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just the fact that there is a horn, like a bell can really only do so much in traffic anyways. You know, there's a device to get the attentions of motorists. Makes me a little happy because now I can get the attention of motorists.
Exactly, yeah.
Friendly, like, not because I want to, you know, irk motorists.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was a fascinating article.
But there's I think as a safety item, I think it is my favorite on that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one that I found was the Your Wisdom in 10 Words interactive bike map, which was basically, I think it's the New York Times that's putting it together. But basically, they're like, you know, put a little push pin in this map and tell us about what you like about this bike
about
route. So it's kind of a crowdsourced, like, where should I bike in town sort of thing.
That's pretty cool too. Yeah.
And it works in New York. It also works in Portland. It also works in a lot of cities around the country. So I don't know if they're still working bugs out. I had a hard time figuring out how to use it at first, but the concept is really great. So, and then the Hammerhead was the other one that was kind of cool.
Oh, the sort of GPS navigation for
right,
bike.
Right. And it was very simple. It looks like it's just like a turn indicator, basically, that tells you when to turn. If you plug a route into your GPS system or something, you have a little, basically, like it'll point you in the direction you need to go as you're riding down the street in a place you aren't familiar with. So, yeah.
Why does Garmin not already do this?
That's a good question. And although
they don't like bikes.
Yeah. Well, there's also the rise of like smartphone technology. Like what, even 5 years ago, it was still kind of a novelty to have a smartphone.
Yeah.
And now it's become pretty commonplace. But the idea is now if you have some sort of mapping application on your phone, you could have your earbuds in or an earbud in if you're bicycling or something like that. And you could be listening to directions as you bike, which is great. So, yeah, I thought that was cool.
Next, from Bike Portland, organic transit velomobiles consider production in Portland. And we had talked about this earlier today.
Right. Yeah, we did a crossover episode with Jeremy from Minneapolis, the Critical Transit podcast. And we talked about velomobiles just a little bit.
My first experience as a guest of a podcast.
Weird, right?
It was really strange. more on that later. From Durham, North Carolina, their based Organic Transit is currently shopping for an office and warehouse in Portland. The company is known for the ELF solar and pedal-powered vehicle, which stands for electric, light, and fun. They still bill them as the most efficient vehicle on the planet. The company is the brainchild of Rob Cotter, a former engineer who worked on racing projects for Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, and BMW. Cotter then moved into the human-powered vehicle scene in the late 80s as a race promoter and vice president of the International Human-Powered Vehicle Association. The appeal of the ELF, according to the company's marketing materials, is that it offers the perfect blend of benefits between a bicycle and a car. The spacious interior keeps you out of the elements and in view of other drivers, reads the website. It's a perfect vehicle for people who want to reduce their car usage but want more than a pedal bike could offer. Our vehicles are designed to make bike commuting accessible and affordable for everybody. The ELF, starting at $4,995, fits on bike paths and sidewalks, and it's also at home in standard vehicle lanes. Its 750-watt motor has a 14-mile range and can power up via solar panels from an electrical outlet. You can also pedal it with 100% human power. The ELF weighs 150 pounds, can carry 350 pounds of cargo, and can go up to 20 miles per hour.
So it's a pretty cool option. Yeah. They're doing a good thing. Have you seen the picture of them yet?
No.
That's what it looks
they're
like there.
They're kind of neat looking.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, we were talking about rain with Jeremy on the podcast that we were guesting on, and I was saying that, like, you know, rain gear is great, but there's also this thing inside me that really wants an enclosed space. Mm-hmm. Like the time I miss a car most is when it's like really shittily rainy outside, and I just don't want to be out in the elements. So, yeah,
oh, hell no, rain.
Right. Exactly. So anyways, I'm kind of excited about this. The fact that they might be in production close to us is pretty great. So Shall we go to some mail?
Let's do some mail.
You got mail. Hey, we got mail.
I was just, we're going to splice that in later, remember?
I decided to do it live.
I'm glad you sang it this time.
Yeah.
Listener Dion twitters a great story to us about Tommy Goodwin's 1939 record for cycling, 100,000 miles.
Yeah, and this article basically shares the premise that, like, even though you could possibly do it, like, this was verified and done in a time before those sorts of things were cheatable. Like,
right.
you couldn't fool somebody into thinking that you had done this without actually doing it at that time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the guy was amazing. So, we got the link up. Check out the story.
And the record could never be broken. Is that right?
I believe so,
According to the article.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah. Glenn from Morrowstone Island. In the comic strip Little Abner, the main characters live in Dogpatch and sometimes imbibe Kickapoo Joy Juice.
Related to our question as, what is Kickapoo Joy Juice?
Kickapoo Joy Juice. The strip ran more or less from 1934 to 1997. As it stopped before you were born, it might have escaped your notice.
Oh.
We're just little kids.
Maybe. Ozette is large and navigable.
That's Lake Ozette, up on the Washington Peninsula.
Oh, yeah. We've been there twice. Once car topping my wife's canoe, and once towing my 18-foot day sailor. Yes, sea conditions on the lake can be fierce sometimes, and it's far from anywhere, which is why we've only been twice. Gas cost is a deterrent for us, and we'd rather not go without a boat.
Yeah, there's not too much to do there if you don't have a boat, I guess, aside from hiking out to that place that, again, is my favorite place on, like, the planet, basically, because it's so far from anything. Sandpoint.
Next, Marcus sends a donation, for which we are very grateful.
Thank you, Marcus. Yeah. And also, Marcus did redesign our podcast logo, which is now up, I think, on the
cool.
iTunes and all that stuff.
Great.
So, yeah.
Yes. It was very creative.
It's fantastic.
I think we mentioned it once before, but I'm really
I'm going to mention it again because it's that good.
Because, yes. It's
next time we make stickers, I actually want to put that, basically just have like a little square podcast icon sticker
like
that we could,
could
slap on stuff. Because people will Google it themselves if they're really curious. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug in Minnesota also donates. We've been enjoying the podcast for over a year now. I first heard about it from another listener, Dan in Minnesota.
Hi, Dan.
I met Dan once. Heck of a nice guy. It's good to hear Sean Granton's voice again on a recent podcast. I had the pleasure of sharing a meal and some adult beverages with Sean when he passed through my fair city on his big tour in 2011. Brock and Aaron, I hope you keep doing what you're doing as long as you can. It's a good show.
As long as we can.
Much.
And a little bit longer since Doug donated to us. So thank you, sir. Thank you so much. I was just telling somebody the other day, I'm like super excited about the fact that we get to do this every week. And that like someone listens to it and finds it enjoyable. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Professor Arnold from Stuart Hall School in Staunton, Virginia.
Oh, yeah. And this is a long one, so don't feel like you have to read it all.
I don't think I've read this one.
Oh, I think I just sent it to you today. I'll just summarize.
Yeah.
Yeah, Professor Arnold. I'm calling him that because he's a professor.
He's a full-fledged professor.
Yeah. And he's responding to that thing where I was like, wait, does the theme music, does it sound slower?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And he says, as an empiricist, Berkeley argued that all ideas come from sense impressions, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, the idea being that, like, you know, the way that you experience things are that has as much to do with the thing as the thing that you're observing or experiencing or whatever.
That's a long conversation.
A good question. Well, I think with all philosophy, it involves
empiricist,
certain assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the primary primary qualities, on the other hand, belong to the object. Extension, which includes size and shape, is independent of the observer. Berkeley, this other guy, disagreed. He claimed that primary qualities, like the secondary qualities, belong to the observer, not the object. So it's possible anyways that like the music's tempo is completely relative in my own head.
Although tempo, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead if you want.
I was just going to say that tempo is one of the few things, apparently, from the studies that I've read, I was a music major.
Okay.
That tempo is one of the few things we actually get right. It's the reason why like CPR classes use a song.
Yeah, yeah.
Both. This is horrible.
One bites the dust.
Another one bites the dust, or Staying Alive. Staying Alive. You know, depending on whether you're an optimist or a cynic. because tempo is one of those things that we just feel that don't deviate with time or with memory. That's all I got.
Yeah, yeah.
At least that we know of.
As far as we know, yeah. Well, and maybe, yeah. So anyway, what this guy is saying is that like the perception could be, like it. My own perception could have affected this, which is different than trying to remember the tempo of the song Another One Bites the Dust or Staying Alive, because like that maybe springs to mind better. But when I'm listening to this song, it might sound faster or slower depending on my own mental state. Mm-hmm. The only other thing he brings up here is the idea that if you believe in an infinite mind that perceives everything, God or insert whatever else fits that description for you, it's very possible that, like, you know, a tree could fall in the forest and it would make a noise. So anyways,
of course it does.
All that, yeah. I really appreciate the time that
I want to read this whole thing.
Seriously, yeah, yeah. So I'll put that up on the website in case anyone wants to delve into that.
Thank you, Professor Brad Arnold.
Yes.
History and philosophy instructor.
Yeah.
Okay. Lastly, Diaz from Sao Paulo on episode 144 with Corey Poole. I've just bought a longboard for go to work. Oh, I did read this one that you sent.
Oh, yeah. It's South American grammar.
Yeah. So I've got a funny story about grammar.
Okay.
And translation. But let's read this first. Just bought a longboard for to go to work. I live in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and I think in a very soon time we will not be able to drive a car because there will be no enough road to so many car. So my solution are trains, subway, and now longboard. I'm surprised Florida is not allowed skate neither in bike lane. It is understandable if compared to our roads where some drivers think they are the owners of the road and don't respect neither another car, neither a biker, and anyone else ahead.
So thank you, Diaz, for listening to
us. Thank you so much. Wow, and all the way from Sao Paulo.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's basically the South American Corey Poole.
You're pretty badass.
Longboarding to work. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So here's the thing about grammar and translation. So I was reading a letter that our German exchange student at work had earlier mailed to the company to apply. Oh, that's
it's
you.
Cool.
Oh, no. This is fun.
Again, we're not live.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll get this in post.
In no way are we live.
Or we won't. And
You of course you'll.
No, yeah. Implicit there will be some post editing in this episode, of course.
So anyways.
It's like the running joke.
Is she? It kind of is, isn't it? I was reading this letter that she had sent. I was reading it like just a while ago. I didn't read it when she had originally sent it. And looking at it and just reading it at face value, I was like, man, your grammar or your English improved greatly in the 6 or 3 months you've been here. But really what had happened was she just originally wrote it in German and then threw it through a translator program and then printed it out and sent it. And it explains so much why one of our community coordinators was like, you know, her English isn't really that good, but I think she'll fit in here. And, like she said that a lot before this girl came over.
And, yeah, it turns and out her English is
her
good.
Her English is fine. Her
the
English
translator
is great.
Sucks.
It's, yeah.
Okay. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I was thinking of that when I read this guy's letter.
Yeah. But, a tree in the forest falls and a translator doesn't.
Translator still does
better.
Not get good grammar.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good times. So, well, hey, that's a show. We've got to it. Just to say, I went to Cranksgiving this last weekend
and
it was awesome. And I think
was your team name?
Team Sincerity.
Oh,
yeah. Right. It was going to be Team Ditai, but then we got Russ and Laura from the Path Less Pedaled. And so we figured we had to get like a more inclusive team name.
Sure.
But we didn't.
I don't know of a team name that would fit you guys more.
Anyways. Oh, that's good. Oh. Yeah. I didn't democratically figure out the new team name. Like, basically, I just kind of... Well, it was kind of like this pinch point. I didn't realize it was time to change the name until it would actually became possible. And I was like, sincerity. So... So that was it. Yeah.
You didn't put in the news the BTA's new infographic?
Which one was that?
It was the one that talks about whether making the case that cyclists pay their way, indeed pay their way on the roads.
Oh, did right. You see this? No, I read about this. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. No, it's basically because some of it is based on, I think the part that they used was, that the BTA used was state funding and how much bicyclists already continue because so many of them already drive cars, so they still actually have those user fees. I'm sorry, am I hijacking?
No,
okay.
No, that's fine.
Because I find this fascinating.
That's what podcasting is all about.
Excellent. And but also, you know, how much of our roads actually are subsidized in no small part from general funds, so beyond the fuel tax. And the commentary that I found fascinating and I'm fascinated by is how much beyond that we subsidize. You know, we subsidize gas.
Oh yeah.
And it didn't. The infographic. There was a lot of you know, just it's kind of like the basic, the very fundamental. Like even the roads that are used, that can be used by people who are walking or biking. Are not subsidized entirely by people who are driving. That is a fallacy in trying to state that fallacy. Yeah, but there's also the larger, you know, of how much we subsidize.
How much extra we subsidize.
Exactly, for driving. Like, we subsidize gas.
Oh.
2008.
Take that, jerk face legislator whose name I can't remember.
How about the fact that we I'm fascinated, like the fact that we still don't talk about the fact that we bailed out the automotive industry.
Seriously.
We gotta help out Detroit. Detroit didn't get shit from that. Detroit hasn't been part of the automotive industry forever.
Right.
Like, not since the mid-80s or early 80s. Sorry.
And their transit system is suffering
Just hit a nerve.
No, yeah. Hey. And I mean, like, entire traffic divisions that are paid with the general fund, that is the purpose of their existence is for traffic infraction, motor vehicle traffic infractions. And that's from property tax. Like, I'm just really hoping that there's a 2.0, like that there are other infographics. It's like, and this is how we subsidize our car craziness.
Right, right. Yeah, well, transparency is a good thing, and knowing more can never hurt you. That's my operating philosophy. So, yeah. Very good. We'll put a link up to that as well, so people can check it out. And I think there a revision to that one?
There was one revision.
Okay, so. Because there was some public discourse in which somebody was upset about some omission, and it's been updated because the BTA are stand-up people.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. Well, and still cars are subsidized.
Right, right.
Like, behold the infographic.
Believe it or not.
The purpose, you know.
It's not a self-sustaining system. Right. Yeah. Well, Steph, thank you for joining us. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you again. Aaron, happy week and such.
Yeah. I'm getting wheels tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Did you good luck on that. Back?
No. I'm building a new one. Oh. I'm going to build it. I'm going to make it better. I've got the technology.
Lemonade.
Lemonade.
Make it lemonade.
Do it better.
Yes.
The Sprocket Podcast is recorded in Portland, Oregon. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback for the program to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message. It's 503-847-9774. You can tell us your stories. Twitter with us at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Brian J. Lane for our theme music, to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. Thanks to Brian Logan for his recurring donations, as well as to this week, Marcus and Doug. We'll see you next week on the Sprocket Podcast. Take care. Oh, we just.
What can compare?
We're trying a new thing. We're taping the conversation and then like
and
doing
the
bumpers and production later because like we're not in pressure. It's not like we're doing this live, you know. But we were curious how it would change the energy of the conversation because I feel like sometimes it's difficult to get the start. I want to make people feel comfortable when they come in, you know. So
I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay.
It's like when I'm listening to it, it's like I like my bike. It's
Also, Hurtbird isn't even a band anymore. Like I mean, as far as I understand that. I think they've kind of dissolved. So, definitely. Yeah. So, not that that matters.
And this is the first episode that we've tried this.
Right.
So, it's hilarious that you notice right away.